I'm Tom Hall. This is the Midday News Wrap. There's no doubt about who won Maryland's elections on Tuesday, but Florida, Georgia, Arizona, not so much. There's also no doubt about what Jeff Sessions thinks about consent decrees. As Sessions left the DOJ on Wednesday, he dealt a parting blow to agreements designed to further police reform, including the one in effect here in Baltimore. There's plenty of doubt about the future of the Mueller investigation. Worries abound that the acting attorney general, a Trump loyalist named Matthew Whitaker, will act to impede it or even end it. Lisa Desjardins of the PBS NewsHour and David Smith of The Guardian join me to look behind the headlines. Plus, Marion Winnick discusses her new book, The Baltimore Book of the Dead, and Jaywin Russick reviews King of the Yees at Baltimore's Center Stage. First, the news. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us today for Midday. It's the Midday News Wrap. Jeff Sessions is out at the Department of Justice. President Trump obliged him to resign on Wednesday, just one day after the midterm elections increased the president's hand in the United States Senate, at least for the time being. The House is a different matter, and Democrats have vowed to hold hearings looking into why Sessions was let go. On his way out the door, Mr. Sessions signed a memorandum that makes it a lot harder for police departments to enter into consent decrees with cities like the one that's in effect here in Baltimore. It's not clear yet what that will mean for the decree being overseen by Judge James Bradar. Mr. Sessions' replacement, chosen by the president, is Matthew Whitaker, whose past comments about the role of the judiciary and Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian election meddling have raised concerns. George Conway, whose wife serves as a special assistant to the president, argued in yesterday's New York Times that Whitaker's appointment is unconstitutional. The president used immigration as his closing argument before Tuesday's election. Yesterday, he changed the rules concerning asylum seekers, disallowing asylum petitions for those who do not enter the country at official checkpoints. The president had a bad day in two different courts yesterday. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the injunction against ending the DACA program, and a judge in U.S. District Court in Montana temporarily blocked the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. And the White House rescinded the press credentials of Jim Acosta, reporter for CNN, after his testy exchange with the president at a rambling press conference Wednesday afternoon. Acosta's questions weren't the only ones that made the president bristle. My guests for the news wrap today are Lisa Desjardins. She's a correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. Hey, Lisa, how you doing?
Great. Good to be here.
And David Smith. He's the Washington, D.C. bureau chief for The Guardian newspaper. David, welcome to you as well, sir.
Thank you. Another quiet week in Washington.
Exactly. Another sleeper. So, Lisa, we're going to just, you know, dig deep and find something to talk about here. Let's talk about the alleged margin that the Republicans picked up in the Senate. Right now, the number is being sort of stated as 51 to 46, but there's all sorts of stuff going on in places like Arizona and Florida. What's your take? Do you think that margin is going to hold?
No, that margin will definitely change. Right? I think a good way to think of it, because we have three Senate races yet to be finished, is that right now, taking those three out of the mix, Republicans have picked up one seat, but that could increase to as many as three by the time all of these elections finish. And one of those elections in Mississippi is a recount, so that's going to be a few weeks until we have that result, but the Republican stands a pretty good chance there. It comes down to Florida and Arizona, perennial contestants in the longest election contest. Usually Florida wins that, but Arizona's making a real run at it this year.
And David Smith, in Arizona, on election night, it seemed that Martha McSally had squeaked by. She's the Republican candidate. This is the seat currently held by Jeff Flake, who is retiring. Martha McSally appeared to be ahead, but as of this morning, at least, Kristen Sinema, her Democratic opponent, is up by just a hair. I mean, it's 49.1% to 48.6. This just almost couldn't be closer.
Indeed. I guess Sinema now appears to have the edge, the way that the count is going, but it is one of those that's too close to call, and who knows how long it will take. clearly that'll be something very significant if Democrats can flip Arizona, a state that I think for many people is associated with the late John McCain, and obviously then Jeff Flake retiring, both of them departing, a real sign of Donald Trump's takeover of the party, that one conclusion from this election is that there's very little opposition to him now. And if Kristen Sinema can take Arizona, that will also be an interesting sign for what to look for in the 2020 presidential election, a state that could be competitive and have all sorts of implications for
indeed.
What candidate the Democrats choose, and you know, whether Donald Trump is on the defensive there. And I think these very close races and possible recounts in places like Florida and Arizona show that Trump may have been very premature in declaring what he called an almost complete victory in these midterms. Not only did he suffer some pretty heavy losses in the House of Representatives, but you know, even the Senate maybe not quite as straightforward as he and everyone else assumed.
Yeah, exactly. And Lisa, in Florida, Rick Scott, who is the current governor, he's also a candidate for Senate. He's running against the Democratic incumbent, Bill Nelson. He's got another razor-thin lead at the moment, about 15,000 votes. He's also alleging that election officials in South Florida, he said in a press conference last night, that they're trying to steal the election. So we're talking about Broward County. We're talking about, this is South Florida that includes places like Miami. Is there any evidence for Mr. Scott's claim, any particular reason to believe that there's something fishy going on in Florida?
There are a few things that Republicans like Governor Scott are pointing to, and it's in Broward and Palm Beach counties. One was a photo. A teacher showed up at a polling place yesterday and found a box that said provisional ballot box on it. She didn't open it. She forwarded it to election officials. There are wide questions. Oh, are these uncounted provisional ballots? CNN was told by an official in Broward County that, in fact, that was just equipment, that there were no ballots in it. But that's something that's getting a lot of attention, I think, in this environment, and it's hard to say that it really has any meaning to it. The other question is about discrepancies in how the vote counts have changed as more provisional and absentee ballots have been counted, especially in Florida. A lot of Republicans say, look at the vote totals have changed for Nelson in the Senate race in a way that they have not changed for Gillum, the Democrat, in the gubernatorial race. And they say that they there smell something fishy, saying, oh, someone's adding to Nelson in a way that doesn't make sense. However, Broward County officials and other officials in Florida have said there was an issue with the placement of the Senate race itself on the ballot, and that it was very easy for voters to overlook that race, to just simply not see it because of where it sat on the ballot, which, of course, does bring us all back to the long national nightmare that was the 2000 race, where there were also problems just with ballot design, different kinds of problems. But if there is a ballot design problem here that is fueling either a real problem in which voters overlooked a race, or a perceived problem in which one party is accusing the other of fraud, it's unbelievable that this is still happening almost 20 years later after Florida had similar issues on the presidential ballot.
Yeah, it really is unbelievable. And David Smith, in Florida, there's a mandatory recount called for if the margin is too slim. As I said, in that Senate race, the margin right now is about 15,000 votes. In the gubernatorial race, which Mr. Gillum has conceded, he has conceded to his Republican opponent, Congressman Ron Santis, the difference there, about 36,000 votes as of this morning. But that is, I think, as well, probably pretty close to the window that would be required for a mandatory recount. So there's just nothing. There's nothing we know about Florida right now.
Yeah, Florida always a bit of a mystery. Again, I guess Andrew Gillum's concession that might now have to be withdrawn. Some echoes there of Al Gore. 2000, and initially calling George W. Bush, and then changing his mind as the count changed. all of this, I think, is worrying in terms of a crisis of confidence in the electoral system, whatever the tremendous ups and downs of the Trump era and all the controversies. I think many people cling to a baseline hope that, well, at least we can still have a say at the ballot box, and at least the integrity of elections must be protected, notwithstanding alleged Russian interference in 2016. And so if even that becomes questionable, then the democracy really is in trouble. And, you know, in that context, we obviously have to talk about Georgia, which I visited a couple of times. Many people I interviewed there said, look, if Stacey Abrams bidding to become the first African-American woman to be a governor of any U.S. state, if she loses, then frankly, we think it will be because of a voter suppression and, you know, this extraordinary situation where the election is overseen by one of the candidates, Brian Kemp, the Secretary of State, as was now apparently the winner. But Abrams is still challenging that. And and again, just as we may see in Florida, in Georgia, you may have a real sense of illegitimacy. And again, this is just a sort of warm-up, perhaps, for 2020, where Trump, if he loses, will make all sorts of claims of vote rigging, and if he wins, one suspects it might be so close that similar questions will be asked again.
Sure, and Lisa, in Georgia, the issue isn't necessarily who's ahead. Mr. Kemp, who has resigned as Secretary of State as of yesterday and is now considering himself the governor-elect, although Ms. Abrams has not conceded that election. The difference in their votes is about 60,000 votes. However, Georgia has a rule that if one candidate doesn't get more than 50%, there's a runoff. So there are people down there in the Abrams camp that are hopeful that whatever the margin ends up being, ultimately, it will be not enough for Kemp to declare victory and another election would be held. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Right now, Brian Kemp does have more than 50%, but a change in maybe 10, 20,000 votes, if I'm doing my math right, would mean that he'd be under 50% and go to a runoff, and then all bets are off. There is a third-party candidate in this race. It was a Libertarian, though, so the Republicans believe in a runoff. The 40,000 votes or so that Libertarian got would likely go Republican. However, if there was a runoff, it's just all bets would be off. The spending would be at astronomical historical proportions. We would see a tremendously I think, brutal race there. Now, we haven't gotten to that point, though. What's happening today, one way that the Abrams campaign is trying to get the extra votes they need, either to win or to force a recount, is they are doing canvassing of people who may have cast provisional ballots who need to go in person and verify signatures, or else those ballots could be discounted. The campaign, I think, estimates there's at least 10,000 of those people whose ballots, the signature was questionable to officials, and they are trying to go in person to make sure that they're trying to knock on doors to get those voters to the polls or to their election site to verify those ballots. So it's sort of a last door-to-door effort for the Abrams campaign to see if they can just get enough votes to at least force a runoff.
And as the President of the United States often says, we'll see what happens. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Jeff Sessions and his decision to resign from the Justice Department, a decision that was prompted by the President of the United States. Lisa Desjardins covers Capitol Hill and politics for the PBS NewsHour. David Smith is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Guardian newspaper. This item from local cultural news. The Baltimore Symphony has just announced that they have suspended their concertmaster, Jonathan Carney. He was evidently involved in an altercation, a verbal altercation, with somebody involved with a different orchestra, the Mid-Atlantic Symphony Orchestra, at a job he played a while back, a week or so ago, and that was not related to his work with the symphony, but the symphony has decided to suspend Jonathan Carney as the concertmaster of the orchestra without pay, and there's no word as to how long that suspension will last. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. We'll be back after this quick break. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, Sunday marks 100 years since the armistice was signed to end World War I. On Monday, I'll speak with historian Nicole Dombrowski of Towson University and local peace activists Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh, who have run Viva House, a Catholic worker house, for more than 50 years. Plus, there's a new report by the United Way that says that nearly 40% of Maryland families are struggling to afford basic necessities like food and childcare. Franklin Baker, the president of the United Way, joins me for a discussion about the plight of Maryland's working poor. If you're just joining us today, it's the Midday News Wrap. My guests are Lisa Desjardins of the PBS NewsHour and David Smith of the Guardian newspaper. David, you've written in the Guardian about the Democrats' intention, evidently, to investigate the removal of Jeff Sessions as attorney general. He, of course, sent a letter of resignation that mentioned that he was resigning at the suggestion of the president. What do you think the Democrats hope to achieve in hearings when they look into the circumstances surrounding his resignation?
I think the foremost goal has to be to protect the integrity of Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian election interference in 2016. And the departure of Jeff Sessions, though widely predicted, was a potential big blow to that, I think, regarded as maybe the first domino in what could be a domino effect that leads to Mueller being starved of resources or the investigation being shut down, which Trump may be itching to do. Democrats in their letter sort of raised the specter of the Saturday night massacre under Richard Nixon, said that the investigation has never been in greater peril than now, and we saw demonstrations on the streets yesterday in defense of Mueller. Obviously, the timing is now interesting. Going back to our previous conversation about the midterms, Democrats now taking power in the House, able to pursue the Russia saga, among other things, armed with the power of subpoena. I think very eager for this to be seen through to its conclusion. You hear some people on the Republican side say Democrats are not talking about it anymore, or the investigation is fizzling or petering out. But frankly, you know, we don't know what Robert Mueller knows. It's been very leak-proof and incredibly important for the nation, for democracy, that it be allowed to run its course.
And Lisa, the president appointed Matthew Whitaker, who had served as Mr. Sessions' chief of staff, to be the acting attorney general. And there are some folks who think that that's an unconstitutional move, including Kellyanne Conway's husband, who's a constitutional lawyer, George Conway, who wrote about it in the New York Times yesterday. What's the general feeling about whether or not Mr. Whitaker is even allowed to be the acting attorney general? And why isn't it Rob Rosenstein, who's the deputy?
I can tell you the sentiment in Congress, which is really the body that is designated with oversight of something that the president does, if it's unconstitutional or not. And in the U.S. Senate, which really is the key playing field here, I don't hear that a lot. I don't hear that argument that this is an unconstitutional appointment, largely because we know under the Vacancies Act that the president can appoint acting officials, I believe it's for up to something like 6 months. And that's the argument the White House is making here. And that seems to be holding with senators on both parties. However, Democrats are calling for Whitaker to recuse himself on the Russia investigation because of his previous statements. So if, as has been reported, he does not recuse himself, Democrats will have a major decision to make over whether they do make the case that this is unconstitutional. They have not made that case yet. And in fact, the leading Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, which has direct oversight of the Justice Department, Dianne Feinstein, she isn't even asking for recusal. She has instead said she wants Mark Whitaker to publicly state he will not interfere with the Russia investigation. That's a lower standard, and we're waiting to see if he actually complies with that. So it comes down to the fact that Democrats are still formulating what they think of all of this. How much of a threat to the Mueller investigation do they think Mark Whitaker is, if any? But right now, that constitutional argument is not one that you hear in Congress, not to a large extent.
Yeah, and David, we have an email from a listener, Michelle, who says, I can't understand why calls for protection of Mueller from day one have never been addressed. With the new House, can't those protections be instituted now? And in fact, the House is likely, would likely pass a bill that would protect Mueller. But is there any reason to believe that the Senate would pass such a bill as well?
Based on past experience, not very much. Clearly, if anything, now the Senate is more grateful than ever to Trump for his work in the midterm campaigns and protecting the Republican majority. And this is one of the great questions, of course, to what extent will Republicans stand up for the rule of law and defend the integrity of this investigation, and to what extent will they bow the knee to Trump on this issue, as they have on so many others. Encouragingly, this week there certainly have been some Republican calls for the investigation to go ahead, but at the same time, over the past couple of years, there have been shifts in the mood music and the narrative. You've seen it going from Trump being almost a lone voice denouncing this as a hoax and something that should be wound up, to Fox News and other conservative media joining in, and just a sort of growing chorus of voices agreeing with Trump that there's nothing to see here, and the investigation is built on sand. So it will be a real test of the party as to whether they defend Mueller to the last or give in to Trump's pressure.
And Lisa, the Democrats did win the election overall in November, this week, but they don't get sworn into office until January. So Mr. Trump has 6 weeks to do whatever he's going to do.
Right.
What do you give the chances of the president actually firing Mueller or ordering Whitaker to fire Mueller and to just put a stop to this? I mean, that would be, many people are saying that might create a constitutional crisis, but
right.
Do you put it past him?
I have no way of this president being as harsh.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to predict that with any president, but especially not this president. I think, all we can go off of is the fact that he has spent a great deal of time talking about how much he dislikes the Mueller probe, how much he would like it to end, and to this date he has not himself taken the action that he says he can to end it. I also think it's worth remembering that while Democrats won the battle for the House, Republicans won in the Senate, and their numbers will grow in the Senate. So this next attorney general appointee, in all likelihood, that nomination will be confirmed, or the vote for confirmation will happen in the next Senate, the more Republican Senate. And meanwhile, Mr. Mueller's report could be filed before that Senate convenes and before the next attorney general is confirmed. So Mark Whitaker, as acting attorney general, should he not recuse himself, really could be the final attorney general to oversee this report if it comes in the next couple of months. So I think there's a lot of very careful consideration of that calendar by this White House. And I believe that with Mark Whitaker in place, should he not recuse himself, I would expect they feel confident with him there and would not make any other moves that affect the Mueller investigation. But, I can't say that's not based on anything but just my looking at how they've proceeded in the past.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, one small correction. It's Matthew Whitaker.
Oh, Matt, I'm sorry. Sorry.
That's all right.
Thank you for correcting me.
not at all a problem. David Smith, I'm interested in a piece that Philip Lacovara wrote in the Washington Post a couple of days ago, saying that the fact that Mr. Mueller evidently decided to withhold whatever he's got until after the election, and again, that's an assumption. We have no idea whether or not that's the thing that's governing Mr. Mueller's timetable. We have no idea how much longer he intends to investigate, but that he basically says that because of that, because now that the elections happened and what's happened in the Senate has happened, that the Mueller investigation is doomed, that the president can, by any number of ways, impede it or even end it. I mean, it could starve it for funds. It could quash the final report being given to the attorney general. I mean, there's a lot of Mr. Trump is not without cards in his hand, right?
Indeed. I think it's a fair inference, especially after what happened with James Comey at the FBI and the 2016 election, that Mueller maybe went a little bit quiet in the build-up to the midterms. I mean, let's face it, he'd been pretty active the previous few months, and we've seen Paul Manafort in court. We've seen all sorts of other charges brought. Now he might pick up the pace again, and supposedly, obviously, Roger Stone could be in the crosshairs, and apparently Donald Trump Jr. has been talking about potentially being indicted. And yes, perhaps, especially if his son gets sucked in, that might push Donald Trump over the edge. I mean, he said again the other day, you know, he could have acted against Mueller at any time, but he hasn't.
You
might be tempted.
Right. Excuse me, Dave. We just got a couple minutes left, Lisa. I want to talk to you about what happened at the press conference the president gave Wednesday. They have rescinded Jim Acosta's pass to the White House, and they have Sarah Sanders, the press secretary, has released a video that was evidently doctored by InfoWars, which is an alt-right website, to sort of make Mr. Acosta's exchange with the president seem considerably worse than it was. What's the feeling in the White House press corps, do you think there's going to be any blowback to that particular move by Sarah Sanders?
Well, this morning, President Trump came out and spoke to reporters again and was asked about all of this, and especially about the decision to suspend Jim Acosta. And, you know, if that would be lifted soon, the president said he had no timeline for when he would lift it, essentially. And he also went further than that and said that perhaps other White House reporters could be suspended. He didn't name any names. It seemed he was speaking in generalities. You know, the Associated Press spoke to an expert who said that video was doctored. And the way it was doctored is a little bit complicated, but it has to do with potentially repeating a frame, which is 1/30th of a second, essentially, repeating a couple of frames in a way, overlaying them in a way that looks like Jim Acosta's hand is doing a karate chop when it was kind of doing a motion through and away toward the young aide's arm. It also might have to do with potentially the aspect ratios being changed, how the video was condensed. So this expert said he felt 100% confident this video had been doctored, however, said he couldn't say how it was exactly why it was doctored. Perhaps it happened in condensing process or not.
Yeah, but Lisa, we're going to have to call it there.
Alarm bells about if in fact the White House purposely doctored video that it sent out to try and attack a reporter with, it raises a lot of very serious questions for everyone.
It does indeed, and afraid we're going to have to stop our questioning about it right here. But Lisa Desjardins from PBS NewsHour and David Smith of The Guardian, thank you so much. I appreciate your being with us today.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
By the way, we have an email from a listener in Illinois wondering if journalists should boycott press conferences by the president. I think that's probably a pretty unlikely scenario. We got lots more coming up on Midday, including a conversation with Marion Winnick about her new book and a theater review by J. Wynn Russick. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.